Good morning. I'm Alexis Strauss-Hacker. I'm chair of the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board. I welcome you to today's meeting. We'll call the roll for our board members in just a moment. First, some logistics. You can see our meetings are hybrid, so in addition to those here in the conference room, we may also receive comment through our Zoom meeting platform. If you're not physically present and intend to comment, you need to be in the Zoom meeting space and not watching through our webcast. If you haven't already received a link for the Zoom meeting, you can visit our website and register through the link listed on the agenda for today's meeting. And after you register, you'll receive a Zoom login link providing access to our meeting. If you're in person and you wish to speak, you can also register online or with the assistance from our team at the registration table outside. For those in the Zoom meeting, you'll be muted until it's your turn to speak. Our staff will then promote you. Please unmute yourself on your computer or your phone so that we can hear you. And when you're done speaking and the board members have completed asking any questions they may have, you'll be placed back on mute. For those in the room here waiting to speak, you'll be called by name when it's your turn. Please come to the podium where we can best see and hear you. Each speaker is given 3 minutes for commentary. We ask that you state your name and your affiliate organization when called upon. And before we ask our board clerk to call the roll, I just wanted to remind board member Ransom, who is participating remotely, to let us know during roll call if there's anyone in the room with him who is over 18, and to remind him to keep the camera on for the pendency of this part of the meeting. Thank you all for joining us today. We look forward to our meeting. I'd now like to ask Julie Haas, our clerk for today's board meeting, to call the roll.
Good morning, Board Member Ransom.
Yes, I'm here, and I'm all alone in my home office.
Beautiful. Board Member Beelin.
Here.
Board Member Batty.
Here.
Board Member Gunther.
Here.
Board Member Kissinger. Not yet. Vice Chair Young.
Here.
And Chair Hacker.
Here. Thank you. We have a quorum physically present for today's meeting. Welcome, everyone. I'd like to turn to item 2 on our agenda, the public forum. I'd like to open our meeting to the public forum and remind everyone that the public forum is for items that are not on the agenda today. You can speak on those items at the appropriate time. The public forum is also not for items that are pending or an impending matter, meaning they're about to come up on our agenda in the next few months. Please confer with our board clerk, Julie Haas, seated here in the front of the auditorium, for any questions or assistance. We'll call on each of our registered public speakers, both online and here in person. If you are remote and haven't been called, please raise your virtual hand on the Zoom platform. That way we will know to promote and call on you during this forum. Again, each speaker has 3 minutes. It will be timed and notified with an online timer visible on the screen. Thank you for your understanding and participation. Julie, shall we start with any public forum registrations?
We have Mr. Jeff Ellsworth.
Welcome, Mr. Ellsworth. Please go ahead.
Is Mr. Ellsworth online?
We're ready for you, Mr. Ellsworth.
Oh, thank you. I'm hoping you can hear me.
Yes.
Jeff Ellsworth, former mayor of St. Helena, Napa County, 2018 to 2022. Hello, Chair Strauss-Hacker and board. Circling back on concerns with Upper Valley Disposal Service, Clover Flat Landfill in Napa County. I'll provide more substantial comments by the February 12th meeting, but I have some comments on the investigation report I received December 2nd. While appreciative of efforts towards investigation in these, at these two waste sites, there is still a long way to go towards objectivity and accountability. Again, I think the only way there is through public hearings with sworn testimony. I was appreciative to see recognition the UVDS Whitehall Lane waste site handles both compost and recycling and operates as a transfer station. I hope this understanding clarifies that waste is hitting a tipping floor at UVDS Whitehall Lane with associated wastewater and liquids, leachate. There should be quantitative analysis based on the volumes of recycle and waste materials processed to understand the volume of leachate and where it goes and where it went previously. I was pleased to see it if additional monitoring will take place, a start on the right track, But so you know, there was another official complaint yesterday by a UVDS Whitehall Lane neighbor of heavy chemical smells from the waste pond the company uses to moisturize compost they claim is organic. The fire report from the Water Board report is dismissive, not acknowledging the recent UVDS Whitehall Lane fire in June of 2024, nor does it acknowledge eyewitness accounts of open flames in a combustion incident October 26, 2024. I'm concerned the Water Board report only interviewed selected employees, officials, and community members rather than taking a full range of input, including with issues of watering the vineyards with compromised water, unmapped piping, and commingling of wastewater. There's significant documentation and eyewitness testimonies to support the complaints from a broader pool than interviewed. Over the past year, there have been continued leachate seeps and a landslide at Clover Flat Landfill. The continued downplaying of the glass fire and radioactive waste incidents is of concern. There are two potential sources of radioactivity, one well-documented. Further investigation should include focus on the types of radioactive isotopes. The report doesn't take accountability for decades of contamination impacts to the primarily Latino UVDS workforce. It needs to be addressed. This is an environmental and civil rights issue. As a public agency, the Water Board can address this through civil rights policies of California and the United States, as well as your own environmental justice policies. What if this was happening to an exclusively Scandinavian or Jewish or African-American or Japanese group in the San Francisco Bay Area, in California, in the United States? This is a dangerous precedent. Please read again the current federal lawsuit against UVDS, federal level lawsuit against UVDS, or at least the summary. I've included them again. And consider the claims to the practice of peonage, a form of servitude. Please look at all the facts and what has occurred here, not just a portion of the story. Thank you. And again, would continue to ask for public hearings with sworn testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ellsworth. I appreciate your ongoing engagement in this matter. Julie, do we have any other public forum registrants?
There's no one else registered at this point.
Is there anyone in the room who hasn't registered but has a public forum comment? If not, public forum is now closed. Let's move to item 3, the minutes of our November board meeting. These are included in our packets and have been posted online. Are there any edits or revisions from board members? I see none. May I have a motion and a second, please?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
The motion was made by Board Member Batty and seconded by Board Member Beelin. Would you take a roll call vote, please?
Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Beelin.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye. Very well. The November board meeting minutes have been adopted by the board. Moving to item 4, which are our various reports, we'll start with our state board liaison, Sean McGuire. Sean, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Strauss-Hacker and board members. It's really good to see you. It's been a while, so it's good to be back, able to provide my report. It's been a busy, busy 2024 and certainly shaping up to be a busy 2025. That said, I'm going to keep this as brief as possible for you all. Lots of changes in play. We have a new federal administration coming in, state budget challenges, lots of moving pieces on the policy front. So there's lots to keep track of. One that I feel is just very important to emphasize for you all, if you're interested, is the process to update the Bay Delta Water Quality Control Plan. It's been 15 years in the making. I'm positive I've shared updates with you over prior state board liaison updates at your board meetings. But what I wanted to report is that things are happening on that front. The draft water quality control plan was released in October, and we're right now in the midst of 5 days of public workshops on various components of that water quality control plan. It is a significant update to the last time the water quality control plan was updated in a substantial way, which was in 1995. So we're coming on 30 years here, and a plan that is in desperate need of revamping due to conditions of our fisheries and the ecosystem in the Bay and Delta. Of course, this affects your region. You're the Bay part, and so I feel that it's something that you should certainly be aware of. It can affect flows, water quality conditions. We're looking at harmful algal blooms, other issues that are impacted by flows. So if you're not tracking it, you're interested to chat more about that at another time, I'd be happy to do so. I also wanted to flag for you on that front that tribal nations, tribal communities have been very engaged on this plan as well. And because it overlaps into your region, there is a possibility that we are going to be considering both listing tribal beneficial uses as a beneficial use in the Bay Delta plan, as well as potentially designating cultural tribal beneficial uses in the Bay Delta plan on a watershed scale. So that would essentially add that beneficial use within your region. I don't know what what the status is of that effort with your board, but I wanted to bring that to your attention just for awareness that the state board is considering that as well at this moment. So all of this is draft. There are many different options, which I won't go into all of the different provisions and different thoughts behind the water quality control plan right now. It would take far too long, but what I just wanted to flag that for you because it does have potentially some implications for your basin plan and your region down the road.
A quick question, Sean. Given where you are in that process, has that initial letter to tribes gone out from state board to ask if they wish to engage in government-to-government consultation?
Yes, there has been quite a bit of outreach on that note. Government to government, general outreach. We're in our last workshop, which was about a week ago. We had the afternoon focused on tribal matters and tribal considerations. So we're now considering forming a tribal advisory group dedicated specifically to Bay Delta matters. So there's a lot happening there, both on a formal consultation level and a more informal public participation level. So, but great question.
Thanks.
Yeah, and so just from a timeline perspective, the goal is to complete that plan update by the middle of next year. There's a lot that needs to happen in between now and then to complete that update. So there things can change, but that's the current targeted deadline. So, happy to answer any questions on that if you have any. And otherwise, the other update I wanted to provide is really on the part of my job that I enjoy more than some of the tough, controversial decisions we have to make, which is on funding, because we do a lot there with our Division of Financial Assistance, really connecting the dollars to the needs of communities on a variety of water and wastewater infrastructure projects. And so it's not an infinite funding source. We certainly have limits and there's not enough money to go around to all the needs statewide. But that doesn't mean we don't accomplish a lot. And it's important to take a moment occasionally to celebrate that, I think, and reflect on the investments that have been made. And so I wanted to share just a little bit about that, but I also wanted to highlight that there of course is additional funding coming our way, and that's thanks to California voters for passing the climate bond in the election in November, which provides $10 billion overall in funding for climate adaptation projects, but a big chunk of that is. About $3.9 billion is for water infrastructure and resiliency projects. So that's across a broad range of different projects: drinking water, wastewater, sea level rise adaptation, flood mitigation. I'm sure you're have seen information on this or considered that when you were voting personally. But what I wanted to do is just highlight that for the State Water Board, it's about, I think it, my understanding is it comes to about $1.3 billion in funding for the State Water Board. And that's about $560 million for drinking water and wastewater projects. On the wastewater side, it is a focus on septic to sewer type projects. So those might mostly be focused on smaller communities. Also, $363 million for water recycling, $101 million for stormwater projects. And then some additional funding, $46 million for US-Mexico border water quality and $23 million for tribal water infrastructure. So it's a significant amount of funding. Again, it doesn't nearly come close to, I know what I know are a lot of really important high priority projects out there, even in your region. I think all of this funding could just be dedicated to your region on some really great projects. We have a big state, so we have a lot of land to cover, a lot of agencies with needs. So I am excited about that funding. It'll still be many months away. Details will be coming out in terms of how that funding will be made available, probably over the next year or so. It does take some time and have to go has to go through the budget process. The other thing I wanted to highlight was just what we've done. So over the past 3 years, the State Water Board's invested $5.2 billion in water project funding, which I believe is a record. And if you look at it holistically, it's 12 million Californians and 395 different projects have been funded, and that includes all of our funding sources. So state funding sources, state revolving fund, which comes in part from the federal government, bipartisan infrastructure law funding, which has been very helpful to keep these programs moving. And then, and just in the last year, this so for this fiscal year cycle, we're looking at another $880 million in projects across the state. And so, so what I did was I took I just I was curious how much. You know, over the past 3 years or so, how much of that funding actually has gone to your region? So how much of it has gone to Region 2? And I've it's actually I was surprised. So it's about $1.6 billion of funding to 53 different water and wastewater infrastructure projects. So all the different types of projects that we funded, drinking water, wastewater, has gone to your region. So that, I think that's fantastic, and that's a certainly a good chunk of the funding. We have nine regional boards, so you can do the math there. But certainly, you have significant needs and a huge population in the Bay, so it makes sense to me. And I just took a look at to see what were the I think is the top six projects or so where actually accounts for over $1 billion of that funding, and the top three. If you're interested, our number one is the City of Sunnyvale Secondary Treatment and Dewatering Facilities, which received about $287 million. Number two is the City of Palo Alto Secondary Treatment Upgrades, $192 million. And then the last one I noted here is the Central Contra Costa Sanitary District Solids Handling Project, which was another $173 million. So there are really, it was about six, seven pretty large, substantial projects, and then lots of smaller, you know, single million-dollar type efforts that are underway. I'm sure coupled with other funding sources. So that's exciting news to report. As we go forward, over the last few years, we've had harder and harder decisions to make with regard to limited funding and our SRF program, and having to consider putting funding caps and really consider the priorities and how best to make the investments with so many important projects out there. So one other heading that's underway right now is a review and potential update to the clean water and safe drinking water SRF policies, statewide policies. And part of that is considering the funding scores, how projects are scored, and what those relative priorities are. And on the wastewater side, so that process is happening. There was recently a workshop on this. It's potentially going to be considered for adoption sometime in early 2025, but that date hasn't been set yet. Some additional discussions will happen, and so on. But I wanted to highlight for you some of the priorities that we're looking at emphasizing for the clean water side for wastewater projects are nutrient removal projects and water recycling. And so, for me, those certainly are huge priorities as we go forward. I know they are for you as well. So I just wanted to flag that as we're looking to the future and really where the biggest needs are in terms of investments that need to be made. I think it's in those two areas predominantly. So that's where I think we're considering focusing our resources at this point. There's also a proposal for looking at greater emphasis on affordability and what that means for communities, for projects, for agencies, in terms of how to connect systems and communities that need the funding the most to ensure that we're helping those as much as we can. So that's what I wanted to flag and highlight for you today. Happy to take any additional questions.
Thanks. That was so helpful. It would be wonderful in our early January call among the nine regional board chairs if someone in the organization could give us a little bit of a briefing on that, the update of those SRF policies. That'd be great.
Great. But yeah, we can make sure that happens.
Our board may have questions or comments for Sean. Andy?
Yeah, Sean, I've got a question, a funding-related question. It's a hard question. I don't expect you to necessarily be able to answer it. But
all
what
right,
I'm
appreciate
wondering
that.
Is if the state board is in the process of trying to come up with a first-order estimate for how much money we think we need to make our water and wastewater systems resilient to the effects of climate change.
Yeah, this is a great question. I don't have the answer to, but what I can tell you is there's so many planning documents out there. And a couple of things that we've done are, for example, the drinking water needs assessment, which is updated periodically, which has an estimate for what it would take to meet all of the needs of mostly the smaller mid-sized drinking water systems around the state. And it's many, many billions of dollars just to make them whole from a resiliency and from a water quality standpoint to address contaminants. And we're right now in the process of developing a wastewater needs assessment as well. So that'll have a statewide cost estimate of the same kind of conditions. What would it take to make wastewater entities, systems, treatment facilities, collection systems around the state resilient in light of that very issue? So it'll be a snapshot. It won't be holistic. We don't tend to focus on the largest systems and agencies, but they usually have pretty good analyses of their needs. So I'm curious. You're right. We should be asking that question. On the other hand, it's probably a pretty daunting number, I think. So
Well,
that's the reality of it.
I'm indeed, I'm sure it's a daunting number. That's partly the value of creating the estimate. I'm representing our board on BCDC, and we have a regional estimate now to build shoreline resilience. And it keeps going up. That doesn't matter to me. I'm really glad that we're trying to make it happen. I'm still convinced it's an underestimate. But we're trying to estimate both the cost of creating resilience and the cost of not making the investment in the first place. And
Yes.
I think it would really help us, over the scale of the next several years, to really begin to try and get our hands around this number in a way that allows us to systematically update it in future years. Because I'm still a little concerned that the task facing us has not, I think we're off by a couple decimal points, and I want to make sure that we really begin to build this reality test into everything that we're doing.
I completely agree with you. And I think that is so important that we're able to tell the story and communicate those needs and help explain that making these, although the number is daunting, making these investments sooner is going to save exponentially higher costs and impacts down the road. I hear you.
Any other board member questions? No. Sean, thank you. And thank you for being Great. With us for so much of the year, and we look forward to seeing you in the new year.
Likewise. See you soon.
Okay. I'm going to check in with each of our board members if there's anything you want to add. Board Member Ransom?
No, I'm okay. Thank you.
Board Member Bielan?
No.
Board Member Batty?
Yes, of course. So good to be here in person after being remote a couple of times. I just want to share a couple of things. So first, I was reappointed by Governor Newsom just recently, which I'm excited about continuing to serve our community. A couple other things. I am being asked as the local farmer on the Regional Water Quality Control Board, what does this winter look like, Jane? And I do not have my farmer's almanac on that. So I wonder, I know last year we got a bit of a state office outlook, which said a lot of things and said then we're not really sure. But what are they saying this year, Eileen?
I'd love to tell you because I had that role for 20 years as the department of the head of the Department of Water for East Bay MUD, and haven't seen my board members yesterday evening. They joked with me they missed my updates. But they would ask me at the last board meeting of the year, which they had their last board meeting yesterday, Eileen, what's the weather going to be? And what I would tell them is, if you look at the experts and all the PhDs and all the models, there's a 33 and a third chance it's going to be wetter than average. There's a 33 and a third chance it's going to be drier than average. And a 33 and a third chance that it's just going to be average. And if you really want to know, ask me after the end of April, because that's when we will know. Okay. The weather predictions, I have looked at them, analyzed them for over 25 years, and they do not have a really good handle on long predictions. They're good for 3 to 7 days out. Even the two-week forecast, having ran a water system for so many years and managing operations of reservoirs and rivers and protecting public health, flooding, all that, we have a ways to go. We have great scientists working on it, but our forecast, the ideal for reservoir operations and to address climate change, especially Dr. Gunther, you're so interested, is if we could get better at forecasting, and I met with a lot of these experts over the years, but for reservoir operators, they need to know far in advance, because if I take you back to 2015, that December was one of the wettest Decembers on record, and I still remember Sonoma County Water Agencies and others released all their water. Somebody at East Bay MUD coordinated with the Corps of Engineers and said, can we hold our water even though we were encroached higher than we were supposed to be, and we'll release it if we see storms coming. No more storms came that year. It was one of the driest years on record. So one of the things to help climate change is if we can get more sophisticated in our predictions. But to answer your question, we'll know next April what this
was. Okay. Okay.
Long answer.
I will tell you the local buzz is that there is more than typical amount of acorns on the ground, and that means a wet winter. So we'll see. Okay, that's the humorous part of my
question. Actually,
questions.
It really just means a lot of squirrels and
a lot
crazy
of squirrels.
Barking dogs.
Yeah, okay. Just on one last serious note, I have been in my day job, been doing a lot of work around recycling and waste management, and California's extended producer responsibility law is in the final stages of CEQA and taking comments. In fact, I just looked and the deadline is next week for comments, but I am pretty excited about this because the extended producer responsibility law, EPR, really shifts responsibility from consumers to producers on a lot of waste management, particularly around plastics and consumer goods. it's got to be helpful to water quality, us, and all our regulated community, that there is help on the way in terms of really reducing the source. So I don't know, at some point, maybe there's an opportunity for our team to put out an advisory or a just information piece to our community so they see what these new expectations are. And then the last thing I'll add is California is one of five states that is doing this right now. There will be many more signing on in the next couple of years. California is the gorilla in all this and is really, as it's done in other environmental regulations, really going to lead the way. Makes me very proud, very happy, and more to come. This is a tough one for the producers, but it's very exciting. It's a real positive step.
Thank you. Board Member Gunther.
I want to share with everybody that last week, BCDC amended the Bay Plan in a manner that many are saying is the most important Bay Plan amendment that has ever been adopted. We have now established a regional shoreline adaptation planning requirement in the San Francisco Bay Area pursuant to Senate Bill 277 by Laird. All of the cities and counties in the region now have a set of standards for plans that they have to submit over the next 10 years. As far as I know, it's the most sophisticated and well-developed plan for sea level rise in the country. And we're certainly going to be amending it as we go forward here, but I think that it's really extraordinary. And at our hearing, there was really very little opposition to it, which reflects the BCDC staff's strong and persistent outreach efforts to work with people in the community. I think that over the next 10 to 20 and even over the next 50 years, we'll be seeing this as the vital administrative structure around which we are building resilience to sea level rise in the region. I was very proud to be able to cast a vote for this on behalf of all of us.
Board Member Kissinger.
Nothing for me.
And Board Vice Chair Young.
No update for ABAG and no personal update either.
Let's turn to our executive officer for her report.
Great, thank you. As 2024 draws to close and we spend our last board meeting of the year together, I want to thank our board chair, our board vice chair, and each of our board members for all their support this past year. I also want to thank the San Francisco Bay Water Board team for their ongoing work and dedication to protecting water quality and the environment. It's been an incredible year. Over the past year, our team has continued to support each other and our mission while embracing the hybrid work environment and our diverse region and multitude of issues we are responsible for regulating. We continue to say goodbye to wonderful colleagues, and luckily, we say hello to passionate new team members. We continue to partner with many agencies and communities to advance climate adaptation, strengthen shoreline resilience, and promote nature-based solutions for rising tides. I want to thank and acknowledge the collaboration with the US EPA, the Bay Area Clean Water Agencies, the Bay Conservation and Development Commission, the San Francisco Bay Restoration Regulatory Integration Team, the Bay Area Regional Collaborative, Caltrans, the US Army Corps of Engineers, and so many others. These collaborative relationships continue to be crucial to all we accomplish as we address the challenges of protecting the Bay Area's water resources. At our September board meeting, we provided an update on our strategic plan performance measures and recognized our many accomplishments over the past year. I want to acknowledge the commitment that led to all these achievements and to recognize the countless hours and ongoing dedication of the San Francisco Water Board team and its board to continue the work day in and day out. Each of our accomplishments represents the commitment, the patience, and passion our team brings to supporting the mission with effective outcomes serving our customers, the public at large. I particularly would like to acknowledge the board's support and adoption of the third nutrient watershed permit, which is probably one of the most significant NPDES permits the board has ever adopted, and was a culmination of years of monitoring, modeling, and studying the impacts of nutrients in San Francisco Bay. In addition, I'd like to bring your attention to a settlement we reached just this past month with Martinez Refinery Company, who will pay $4.5 million to settle clean water violations linked to its refinery in Contra Costa County. Our enforcement team identified discharges threatening human health, water quality, and the aquatic environment, and I want to thank them for their diligence in reaching this impressive settlement. Finally, I want to recognize one of our team members today, Alec Nagel, who is the manager of the Toxics Cleanup Division, who has been with us for 25 years of service with the Water Board. Although we don't have his plaque yet from Sacramento, I did not want the year to close without recognizing Alec and his commitment to our team. He joined the Water Board team in 1999 as an engineer and geologist in the Groundwater Protection Division after a decade in consulting, and as a regulator for San Diego and Solano counties. He was promoted to engineer and geologist, where he directed staff and the oversight of cases in the Department of Defense and site cleanup programs. He also principally authored the region's 2009 low threat assessment tool for chlorinated solvent sites, which continues to guide the investigation, cleanup, and closure of our cleanup sites today. During the last decade, Alec has advanced our thoughts on regulatory strategy for cleanup as we negotiate new and evolving challenges such as vapor intrusion, PFAS, and climate change. Alec has also been a great mentor and coach for our staff and management over his 25 years, stepping into the role of the Division Manager for Toxics Cleanup Division in 2019. I'm grateful for his dedication and thank him for his many years of contributions and looking forward to many more to come. So with that, Alec, I want to say thank you, and we should hopefully have your plaque here. And with that, I just want to wish you and your families a joyous holiday season and a very happy and healthy 2024. And I'm very excited about what we will accomplish together in the new year. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen, and congratulations, Alec, on 25 good years. We hope that the new year will bring you similar worthwhile professional challenges and lots of opportunity to work with a great team here at the Water Board. It's one of the strengths of this organization to have people who have the breadth of commitment and the experience and the common sense they bring to their work. And so we, as a board, are grateful for that in you and many others. With that, let's move on to administering the oath and the rest of it. And sure, go ahead.
I've got two quick questions. One, I was very impressed by the settlement with Martinez Refining, and I wanted to ask about how exactly it is that we determined that 72,000 gallons, not 78,000 or 61,000. Ended up in the marsh, and one of our discharge estimates were pretty specific, and I was wondering, is that because the Martinez Refining Company is required to measure these kind of things and report them to us, or was that our own monitoring and detective work?
Right. So technically, a discharger is supposed to report when they have unauthorized discharges, and they're supposed to estimate the volume. They do the best they can. We also had incredible staff working on this, and I should give credit to, there's a big team. Gaurav Mittal, who's no longer with us, who left earlier this year, he was key in working on this, along with Robert, who's on vacation, Bill Johnson, who's on vacation. I think Brian Thompson's here, Karina, Deirdre Ryan. There was a whole team of people who worked on it, but there was first some good work done by the team, and then there was discussions with Martinez Refinery, and then once there was the quote, the evidence or the discussion, then we came to a settlement instead of getting involved in lawsuits, which was, I want to give credit to the team for reaching, I think, a very good settlement on these three significant violations.
Okay, so it was probably then a combination
yeah.
of our own detective work. And okay,
yeah.
That's very impressive. And I think that clearly we had a pretty solid case to get this settlement. And so that was great. The other question I have for you is just to follow up on Sean's statement that, if I got the numbers right, about $400 million is being directed to Sunnyvale and Palo Alto wastewater treatment for upgrades. And I was wondering if those projects are going to bring those two facilities into compliance with the nutrient permit. And if you don't have the answer now, that's fine.
I would have to check if they're going to be in compliance. They're definitely reducing their nutrients as part of the project. And these projects were started quite some time ago. They were, quote, one, some, and we want to give them credit because they are the early actors. And I think Palo Alto's will, I'm not sure about Silicon Valley.
Okay,
I think it might be, you know, but that's something we want to work with the dischargers on. And that's one of the reasons Alexis and I have been working on the compliance schedule policy, because after spending all these money, someone like Silicon Valley, who I don't think will meet the new nutrient requirements, Palo Alto I think will, they don't want to have to spend money again right away, so if they can have some additional time. So, but I would have to confirm, and I can check and send you an email, but I think Silicon Valley will not be meeting the new, though I think they'll be a little shy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was interested in, obviously, I think these proposals for these projects, I know this clearly predated our vote on the permit. But it shows what's possible with some forethought and given how much testimony we absorbed about how it was not feasible and so expensive, and I'm just really pleased to see these two facilities kind of leading the way, and I hope that at the right time we'll be able to congratulate them on their forethought.
Yeah, and we're very appreciative of them because, you know, even in the second nutrient watershed permit that was adopted in 2019, we talked about people being early actors and not waiting. We all know for decades now that San Francisco Bay is one of the most nutrient-rich estuaries in the world. You can't continue that. And so we are very excited about both of those agencies and others that have been early actors. And we have a number of them that have taken action and didn't even wait till the third permit was adopted. So, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. All right, let's move to the next agenda item. I need to administer the oath. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested parties. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witness by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that's reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this process. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise or raise their hand. Do you promise to tell the truth? Thank you. And now, Eileen, would you continue with the board item on our calendar for today, which is item 5, the Sonoma Valley County Sanitation District reissuance of their NPDES permit.
Yes. So this revised tentative order would reissue the NPDES permit for the Sonoma Valley County Sanitation District wastewater treatment plant and sanitary sewer system. The plant provides tertiary treatment of about 2.9 million gallons per day of wastewater collected from the city of Sonoma and unincorporated areas of Glen Ellen, Boise Hot Springs, El Verano, and Agua Caliente. Kerry O'Connor, Water Resource Engineer in the MPDS Division, prepared the permit, and she's available to answer any questions. Also, we have Sonoma County Sanitation District staff available if the board has any questions, but this permit is uncontested. I'm happy to report.
Thank you. Julie, do we have any members of the public that would like to comment on this item before I turn to the board?
No one's registered for this item.
Very good. Are there board questions and comments?
I just want to say that, again, I only do this every so often, but the uncontested nature of this permit is a real testament to the quality of work that the board staff have done. And I read the comments from Sonoma County. It was very clear that they were very satisfied as well. And so hats off to all of you.
I want to thank our permit writer for her work here. I have one quick question. I'm always interested in both the pretreatment and biosolids elements of permits, and I didn't know if this facility is subject to pretreatment requirements or if it has any industrial users in its service area. Next one. There you go.
I believe they are not subject to pretreatment. They are not.
Okay. Just a quick reminder as we look at permits in the new year to always check that box for me about whether there's a requirement and whether there are industrial users. I just feel it's so critical to the quality of the effluent that is delivered. And then secondly, I wanted to offer compliments to the district itself for their upgrades that are in process and just the continuing investment in their infrastructure. And with that, I think we are ready. Eileen, do you have a recommendation?
Yes, thank you. I recommend the board adopt item 5, the reissuance of the MPDS permit for the Sonoma Valley County Sanitation District.
I ask this board for a motion and a second.
So moved.
I'll second.
Moved by board member Kissinger and seconded by board member Young.
Good for you.
Was it? Oh, it was you. Sorry.
Well,
I correct myself. I heard it on this side. By board member Dielen and seconded by board vice chair Young. And Julie, would you make a roll call vote?
Yes, for the record, I wanted to note that Bill Kissinger was here as of 9:17, so we'll be part of the vote. Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Bielen.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye. Thank you. We have an adoption of the reissued permit. And thank you for coming in person. All right, Eileen, would you like to proceed with the longstanding, complex, and fascinating item 6, which is the California Department of Transportation? We are interested as a board in an update on compliance with our cease and desist order and the challenge of implementing the trash discharge reduction requirements.
Yes, thank you, Chair Hacker. So this item is going to provide you a comprehensive update on Caltrans compliance with the cease and desist order. Chi Yang, who leads this program, is a water resource control engineer in the watershed division, and she's going to provide a presentation. That will be followed by a presentation by Hardeep Takara of Caltrans, and then Josh Quigley from Save the Bay will provide some comments. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chi.
All right, thanks, Eileen. Good morning, Chair Hacker and board members. I'm here today to provide you an update on Caltrans progress toward meeting the trash reduction benchmarks and requirements under their 2019 cease and desist order, which I will refer to as the order. The order enforces the state water board's requirements to control trash by 2030. Next slide. For my presentation today, I will remind you about the impact trash has on our waters. I will cover the other trash control requirements. I will give an overview of Caltrans compliance with the order's requirements. and I will discuss areas Caltrans must focus on to achieve compliance and effectively control trash discharge from its right-of-way by 2030. You've heard some of this in past presentations. The difference between past presentations and our main message today is that today we are telling you that Caltrans is on the right track. Since 2022, Caltrans has made significant progress implementing structural trash controls. There is still work to do to achieve compliance by 2030. Caltrans needs to implement additional trash control actions, and they need to complete their multi-year studies on the benefits of enhanced maintenance and the vegetative controls, which I will discuss later in this presentation. We are working closely with Caltrans to set them up for success in meeting the order's requirements. Next slide. Along with PCBs, mercury, nutrients, and other pollutants, trash significantly impacts our the beneficial uses of our region's creeks and the bay. In 2009, Water Board staff assessed our region's water bodies and identified 24 creeks and 2 shoreline areas impaired for trash due to substantial observations of trash. These are shown on the map on the right. These are conservative estimates. If we were to evaluate compliance with the trash water quality objectives established by the State Water Board in 2015, most streams and many shoreline areas in our region will likely be considered impaired by trash. Municipalities under our municipal regional stormwater permit have been required to implement trash controls for over 10 years, and Caltrans order was issued to ensure Caltrans meets the State Water Board trash requirements. I will remind you next about the order's requirements. Next, please. Caltrans has about 25,000 acres of right-of-way in our region. The order's benchmarks, which you can see on this slide, are interim milestones that require Caltrans to control trash from about 1,000 acres of right-of-way per year, with a cumulative total of 8,800 acres by 2026. When the order was issued, 8,800 acres of Caltrans right-of-way was estimated to be significant trash generating based on Caltrans visual assessments, and that thus requires trash controls. In addition, the order requires Caltrans to reassess the trash generation conditions in its right-of-way to determine the full extent of significant trash generating areas. All areas that generate significant amounts of trash must be controlled by December 2nd, 2030. Next slide, please. Caltrans met the 2,000-acre benchmark in 2020, but as we told you in the previous slide updates, Caltrans did not meet the 4,000-acre June 2022 benchmark. Since 2022, Caltrans has made significant progress implementing structural trash control, and they're on the right track. Before, we told you additional studies was needed to demonstrate the effectiveness of enhanced maintenance and the vegetative control measures. Those studies are now underway, and we coordinated with Caltrans on their design. We are also working with Caltrans on pilot testing of new large capture devices to add to the toolbox of available trash control measures. Next slide, please. This table shows Caltrans claimed compliance with the 2024 6,000 benchmark. Caltrans has based this compliance claim on 3 main categories: installing trash capture devices in Caltrans right-of-way, working with municipalities to found cooperative trash control projects, and implementing enhanced maintenance measures, such as increased street sweeping and trash pickup. Photos on the left and in the middle show devices that can be installed to capture trash. The photo on the right shows a typical long structural trash control, a Caltrans maintenance group picking up trash along the roadside. As shown in the table, since 2022, Caltrans has made significant progress implementing structural trash controls to control trash discharge from approximately 4,700 acres of significant trash-generating areas. This was achieved by both on-right-of-way implementation and cooperation with local partners. Numbers in the parentheses are net increase of controlled acres achieved since 2022. As you can see, Caltrans has more than doubled the areas controlled by structural controls since 2022. This is significant progress since the last benchmark. Caltrans will describe a number of success stories in the next presentation, including recent projects implemented in Oakland and Hayward. Additionally, Caltrans claims that enhanced maintenance measures have effectively controlled trash discharge from approximately 3,200 acres of significant trash-generating areas, as highlighted in the table. We don't yet agree that enhanced maintenance measures are equivalent to full trash capture. However, as I just told you, Caltrans is completing a multi-year study to evaluate the effectiveness of enhanced maintenance measures. We think that's the right next step. Next slide, please. We are working with Caltrans to evaluate the benefits of enhanced maintenance measures. Enhanced maintenance measures are actions like street sweeping and trash pickups that are completed at a frequency and a quality sufficient to prevent the discharge of trash to the storm drain. We performed driving inspections with Caltrans staff in fall of 2023 and 2024 through about 1,000 acres where they have claimed compliance with the June 2024 benchmark via enhanced maintenance. Many of these areas were mostly free of trash, and the conditions on the ground looked generally cleaner than some areas we observed in 2022, where Caltrans had claimed compliance toward the 2022 benchmark. However, some areas where trash had recently been collected had already regenerated the trash to significant levels. These areas had trash present, especially in landscaped areas off the pavement. While we know many Caltrans highway corridors are generating less trash due to the increased funding dedicated toward maintenance efforts, Caltrans is faced with the challenge of demonstrating that those maintenance actions are sufficient to control trash to a full trash capture standard. The photo on the left shows a common sight since the order's issuance: a pile of trash bags collected by Caltrans maintenance crews. This was taken on Highway 4, where we saw numerous piles of trash bags, but also areas where loose trash had already regenerated to a significant level. This highlights the challenge of demonstrating full trash capture equivalency, or that trash, including small pieces of trash, is controlled through the right-of-way at a pace faster than it is generated. Caltrans is conducting a trash discharge monitoring study that is intended to demonstrate the efficacy of enhanced maintenance measures, which I will discuss in the next slide. Next. In 2023, Caltrans initiated a three-year trash discharge study to monitor the amount of trash entering storm drain inlets at 60 locations statewide. This study will help us better understand the level and the frequency of maintenance needed over a segment of highway to keep the volume of trash discharging into the storm drain to low levels, or equivalent to full trash capture devices. We have engaged with Caltrans on the study design and participated in several technical workshop discussions with Caltrans and the State Water Board staff in 2024. We expect to use this study's findings to identify when enhanced maintenance may be equivalent to full charge capture, and when additional or other actions may be needed to control trash. One of the reasons maintenance may be infeasible is due to worker safety. In such instances, Caltrans' obligation is to identify alternative methods to control trash. Next slide. In the field, we also visited a number of sites where Caltrans claimed compliance toward the 2024 benchmark based on a combination of roadside vegetation and trash pickup. Vegetation control is when vegetation in landscaping adjacent to the paved right-of-way traps trash so it can be removed by maintenance crews before discharging to the storm drain. Most of the areas we inspected seem to have dense and sufficient vegetation to detain trash. However, some areas may need additional control measures to ensure trash is controlled and can be removed before blowing off-site or discharging to the storm drain. The top middle photo shows a yellow screen over a storm drain inlet. That is an example of an engineering measure that may be used to improve trash control. Caltrans staff noted that this may be used in landscaped areas off pavement where flooding and maintenance are not an issue or are less of an issue. Caltrans needs to commit to adequate trash pickup maintenance actions to remove and prevent discharge of accumulated trash. We are continuing to work with Caltrans to ensure the actions taken in those areas are sufficient to comply with the order. Next slide. Caltrans is also taking actions to further increase structural control implementation. As an effort to expand their toolbox of structural controls, Caltrans is conducting a 2-year pilot study to evaluate the feasibility of installing large trash capture devices, such as hydrodynamic separator units and multi-gross solids removal devices, as shown in the photos, within its right-of-way to allow large Caltrans drainage areas to be treated. We expect implementation of the pilot project will lead to these devices being approved for wider deployment within Caltrans right-of-way. Next, please. Additionally, Caltrans is taking steps to prioritize assessments and implementation of trash controls in remaining uncontrolled high and very high-rated highway corridors. In 2024, Caltrans started a series of corridor-based feasibility study workshops for 3 prioritized highway corridors in the Bay Area. We think this new shift of focus will help Caltrans optimize use of their resources and expedite planning and implementation of trash controls on its right-of-way. In the corridor assessments, Caltrans needs to expand its current toolbox to incorporate new devices. Additionally, to address highway flooding as a result of climate change-driven sea level rise and storm surge, there likely will be drainage retrofit opportunities being planned for existing drainage systems in low-lying highway segments close to the bay, which may present an opportunity to incorporate trash controls in those significant trash-generating areas. There is also a need to develop innovative trash control solutions for very high and high areas that are constrained by right-of-way space and worker safety considerations. We continue to stay engaged with Caltrans on the corridor feasibility studies to ensure trash control opportunities are fully identified in those areas. Next slide. To recap, Caltrans has achieved significant progress controlling trash from its right-of-way since 2022, and they are taking several new approaches to advance additional trash control compliance actions. To achieve compliance beyond 2024, Caltrans needs to continue the good progress. We think the large trash capture device pilot study will help them identify more trash control opportunities. We also anticipate an increase in local collaboration as the municipalities need to implement trash control projects to achieve the June 2024 trash reduction deadline in the municipal regional stormwater permit. We will continue to collaborate with Caltrans and its local partners to move potential projects forward. Caltrans' ongoing trash discharge study is evaluating the effectiveness of enhanced maintenance and vegetative control measures, as I discussed earlier in this presentation. Caltrans is halfway through that study and has finished collecting the first year monitoring data. We are discussing the preliminary data collected with Caltrans, and we anticipate getting new information as the study progresses. We think Caltrans is on the right track to provide the information needed to substantiate efficacy of enhanced maintenance measures and vegetative controls. Caltrans also need to ensure long-term funding to sustain the claimed benefits for enhanced maintenance measures. We will continue to work with Caltrans to monitor progress to ensure that sufficient data is collected to support the study's findings and to identify any needed follow-up actions. Lastly, we also expect Caltrans' ongoing corridor-based feasibility study will help identify additional viable trash control locations. Next, please. I will wrap up with our next steps. Caltrans has three key submittals coming up at the end of next year that will help it lay out a path to compliance through 2030. Caltrans will submit an updated trash control implementation work plan that will lay out its path to compliance. This will include projections for structural and non-structural control implementation to meet benchmark in 2026 and the final compliance in 2030. Caltrans will reassess the trash generation conditions in its right-of-way to determine the full extent of significant trash generating areas. Caltrans will also submit a feasibility analysis building on previous submittals that lays out constraints but also opportunities for feasible trash control implementation along specific highway corridors in our region. We plan to continue meeting monthly with Caltrans to discuss submittals, plans, and progress toward achieving benchmarks. And we also plan to update the board on progress in implementing trash controls to meet all the requirements. That concludes my presentation today. And I'm happy to take any questions you may have now.
Do board members have questions of our team? Jane?
It's just sort of a detailed question, but so I just want to understand. So for the for 2024 this year, the number is 6,000.
Yeah.
And when do we get the report on that? Is that not till a year from now or on compliance with that?
So we received the annual report on October 1st.
October 1st.
This year.
So, okay, for 2024?
Yeah, that claims compliance for the 2024 benchmark.
Okay, yeah. And so if we assume the maintenance number is right, then they did meet that? They met that 6,000?
So I think the question is about whether we think the maintenance actions are sufficient, and they are doing that in progress study to answer that question.
Got it. Okay, thanks. Yeah. Appreciate it. Robin.
Anything further to my right?
I have. I guess I just want to follow up on that. The report that we received with our board packet suggested, at least to me, the way I read it was they have not met the requirement. But the presentation you made suggests, obviously, that they're on the right track. But I guess I didn't hear you address that question. Is it our view that Caltrans has not met the milestone? We disagree, at least at this point, with their view about having met the milestone, that they say they have, we do not believe they have? Or is the jury out for the jury?
So I think based on our field inspections with Caltrans, we think there's additional improvements needed for their maintenance actions. However, Caltrans is saying, you know, they don't necessarily agree with that. And so that's why they started this trash discharge monitoring study to helpfully answer whether the current level of maintenance is sufficient to allow them meet the 6,000 acre benchmark.
But the study was begun 2 years ago, right? Or at least
the study was started in 2023. Yeah. It's a 3-year monitoring study that will conclude at 2026.
But where we stand, I guess I just want to know yes or no. Do we think they met the milestone or don't? Or would think they haven't?
And so you're asking a good question, and it's a little maybe gray. As she said, they met the benchmark in 2020, and they did not meet it. Correct me if I'm wrong. In 2020, they did not meet the last benchmark. But what we're trying to do is, they're saying they met it. We're saying no. And what we're really saying is a little bit too. The jury's out. We need these discharge studies and stuff to be completed to figure out, do they get credit for certain things? And so that's.
So we won't know until 26 whether they met the benchmark in 24.
That's, would you agree, Keith?
Mr. Kissinger, that's a pretty good summary. We just add the work that Caltrans is doing now is going to inform sort of, it's either a yes or no, or are there some modifications? There's benefit to the enhanced maintenance work that's being done. Does it get to the finish line of being full trash capture equivalent? And the study's going to inform.
And who's doing the study? Is Caltrans doing the study, or is a neutral party doing the study?
Gee, I don't know who the parties are on the ground. I know Hardeep Tucker from Caltrans headquarters is here, and he perhaps could speak to that as part of his presentation.
Okay, I'll let them make the presentation.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keon. I'd like to welcome our colleagues from Caltrans. Hardeep Tucker, please go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair and esteemed board members. I'm Hardeep Tucker. I'm the Chief Environmental Engineer from Caltrans and headquarters. I also have with me from the Bay Area District, Brian Rowley, our Water Quality Program Manager. And also on the line is Leah Boodoo, who's a Deputy Director for Maintenance for the Bay Area District. You all may be familiar with Ken Johansson, who's previously been at these meetings. He was unable to make it today. He's also with headquarters team, leading the effort statewide on the trash compliance. Because of Caltrans's commitment to environmental stewardship, we're pleased to return today to update the board on Caltrans's progress in meeting the trash cease and desist order requirements. The progress resulted from a number of people who did work behind the scenes in the Caltrans team in collaboration with the regional board, the state board, local municipalities, and also the environmental advocacy group Save the Bay as well. As documented in the trash reduction annual report submitted in October, Caltrans is proud of the total credits claimed, which exceed the 2024 compliance benchmark of 6,000 acres of Caltrans right-of-way. Caltrans is dedicated to continue working alongside our regulatory, environmental advocacy, and municipal partners to protect water quality by delivering on the future commitments set forth in our 2023 Compliance Action Plan. In addition to ongoing collaboration with stakeholders, Caltrans has also engaged with academia to assist in designing and overseeing the trash discharge study, an endeavor critical to validating the compliance claimed from manual trash collection and freeway sweeping activities. Next slide, please. Caltrans has been advancing trash control implementation actions consistent with the Comprehensive Compliance Action Plan prepared in response to the San Francisco Bay Water Board feedback received in December 2022. Caltrans has updated 2024 through 2026 Compliance Action Plan memorializes the evolving Bay Area Trash Control Program, which is also reported in the 2024 annual report submitted in October. Some of the highlights include advancing innovative full trash capture device technology, developing a sophisticated trash assessment and compliance dashboard that delineates each discrete trash control action through a visualization platform, and engaging in collaborative interagency corridor assessments to ground truth implementation efforts at sensitive areas. And the compliance action plan includes details on Caltrans trash discharge study, a field-based monitoring effort underway to objectively identify a maintenance standard equivalent to the effectiveness of a trash capture device. At the conclusion of the study in 2026, Caltrans enhanced maintenance measure efforts will be reviewed and considered for formal compliance credit eligibility. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. The 2024 annual report documents Caltrans's cumulative trash control compliance progress through June 30th, 2024. Caltrans's multi-pronged trash control actions include the following distribution. 62% of the compliance is delivered from deployment of trash control devices, both on Caltrans right-of-way and within municipal partner rights-of-way. 38% of compliance claimed is generated from institutional trash controls, which include enhanced trash collection and sweeping at hotspots and trash removal in areas where vegetation has trapped trash, and source control through a network of agencies addressing the humanitarian crisis of people experiencing homelessness by connecting them to locally administered social services and safe transition housing options. Beyond the aforementioned actions that yielded compliance credits, Caltrans also invests in targeted public education campaigns to increase public awareness regarding the detrimental impact of illegal littering and dumping. Next slide, please. This slide provides a snapshot of the current status of trash capture devices within Caltrans's right-of-way. Compliance projections from trash capture devices within Caltrans right-of-way continue to increase, with more than 2,300 acres of treatment expected to be delivered by the 2026 benchmark, an increase of 1,300 acres compared to the 2024 delivery. Caltrans has also patented an innovative inlet-based trash capture device in the same time. In response to the input from the San Francisco Bay Water Board, Caltrans is further evaluating new tools for its trash control toolbox by piloting hydrodynamic separator units and a new configuration for gross solids removal devices. These devices are large capacity systems that increase financial and maintenance efficiency by controlling trash from large tributary areas at one centralized location. The pilot, coupled with priority corridor assessments, have resulted in increased capture opportunities. Next slide, please. This slide provides an update on Caltrans-funded regional partnership projects that subsidize constrained funding in order to optimize environmental outcomes from watershed-based engineering solutions. Caltrans has committed approximately $160 million since 2018 across 43 local projects, with 32 projects delivered, generating trash control for more than 2,500 acres of Caltrans right-of-way and over 40,000 acres of local right-of-way. Caltrans also offers consultant support for concept development to help local partners evaluate device feasibility as well. Through partnership projects, Caltrans projects to control trash from more than 3,300 acres of Caltrans right-of-way and 50,000 acres of local right-of-way through 2026 and beyond. Caltrans will continue to engage with local municipalities on future partnership opportunities and work with the San Francisco Bay Water Board to explore alternative compliance credits from Caltrans funding that results in regional trash control projects to offset areas within Caltrans right-of-way that are deemed infeasible. Next slide, please. The following video demonstrates Caltrans's commitment to environmental protection by showcasing the Bay Area partnerships to construct devices and the relentless efforts of Caltrans maintenance forces in collecting trash. These efforts protect San Francisco Bay and its tributaries by preventing public generated trash from reaching sensitive waterways. Can you please play the video, please?
Caltrans faces a challenge in keeping up with the amount of trash left behind by the public. Chronic trash on our highways contributes to economic, environmental, aesthetic, safety, and public health issues in communities throughout the state. For example, some East Bay corridors require crews to collect trash every 2 weeks due to the regeneration in those areas. To meet the challenge, Caltrans is using a multifaceted approach in the Bay Area to stop trash from reaching the Bay and its estuaries through utilizing trash capture devices and storm drain systems, increasing freeway sweeping and litter collection, removing litter trapped by vegetation, and funding local partnerships that facilitates watershed-based engineering solutions. Caltrans has also bolstered litter abatement efforts in the Bay Area by offering free dump day events to discourage and eliminate illegal dumping, and created a renewed focus on the Adopt Highway program with the introduction of an incentive stipend to encourage volunteerism. Caltrans also provides funding to local agencies for trash cleanup on Caltrans right-of-way. To date, over 100 high trash generating locations at intersections in Oakland and San Jose are being kept clean, while also providing jobs to people experiencing homelessness in those same communities.
There were a lot of homeless people that we hired that it really helped them to come back up and go look for a job, gain the experience of cleaning up. Clean California really helps a lot of people. It even helped me to get a car, have a bank account.
Clean California affected my life in a positive way. I was able to pay for a license, pay for a car, registered, learned how to show up on time, communication, you know, and I learned about the chain of command.
Gave me the opportunity to have a job after COVID, and I learned a lot of stuff. How to supervise, how to manage, how to do paperwork. I was able to move into a safe parking space with the RV that, you know, I was before I didn't have. It gave me the okay to be okay.
In the South Bay, an innovative litter vacuum is being piloted to safely and efficiently clean up small trash that is difficult to pick up with a traditional litter picker. Caltrans partners with the California Highway Patrol to remove debris from freeway lanes that present a hazard to the traveling public. Encampments produce a lot of trash, human waste, and debris. To move people into housing, the California Interagency Council on Homelessness has issued $50 million in encampment resolution grants in the Bay Area to assist local jurisdictions by providing services and support to create a pathway to safe and stable housing. Thousands of Bay Area people experiencing homelessness, residing either entirely or partially on state right-of-way, have benefited from this funding. Caltrans is conducting a multi-million dollar three-year trash discharge study that will measure the amount of trash that enters the storm drain system. This effort will determine the effectiveness of Caltrans maintenance trash collection efforts in protecting water quality. Caltrans is committed to ongoing collaboration with all stakeholders to provide transparency in developing scientifically sound conclusions from the trash discharge study. CalSTA and Caltrans are committed to increasing the level of trash capture devices, including deployment of both on-system devices and local trash capture projects funded by Caltrans. In the last year, Caltrans has programmed $100 million in new funding from the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that will increase trash control in over 600 acres of Caltrans right-of-way. Caltrans is accelerating delivery of new inlet-based trash capture devices technology while also revisiting the use of hydrodynamic separators. These HDS devices use gravity to create a vortex that swirls captured stormwater to extend the flow path as long as possible and provide the time required for trash to rise while sediment and other pollutants settle into a sump. The first HDS unit deployed in Caltrans Bay Area right-of-way was constructed in partnership with the City of Hayward. Caltrans funded three HDS units through a $3.8 million reimbursement grant that captures trash from 104 acres of Caltrans right-of-way and 821 acres of Hayward right-of-way. Today, through more than $120 million in Caltrans investments, Caltrans local partners have constructed 32 projects to address approximately 2,500 acres of trash capture for Caltrans and over 40,000 acres of trash capture for our local partners. Over 90% of Caltrans reimbursement grants serve economically challenged areas. Completing construction in November of 2024 with a $13 million investment from Caltrans are two large trash capture projects in the city of Oakland that not only remove trash, but also remove legacy PCB and mercury pollutions deposited from old industrial land uses in the area. Two debris separating baffle boxes remove pollution from stormwater runoff from over 1,100 acres of Oakland and Caltrans jurisdictions. Through a $4 million reimbursement grant, Vallejo Flood and Wastewater District successfully installed four trash capture devices to address trash capture for 335 acres on Caltrans right-of-way and 9,500 acres on Vallejo right-of-way. City of Richmond, through an $8 million reimbursement grant, installed five trash capture devices to address trash capture for 150 acres on Caltrans right-of-way and 3,225 acres on Richmond right-of-way. California invested $40 million in public education campaigns to raise awareness and increase understanding of the sources and pathways of trash and other runoff pollutions. In 2021, Caltrans launched Let's Change This to That, a statewide stormwater public education campaign, followed in March of 2023 with a Clean California public education campaign. The campaign to date, along with Caltrans public affairs efforts, have reached over 1.3 billion media impressions in the Bay Area alone. Caltrans is committed to the environmental protection, demonstrated by our strategy to deploy current technology and partner with local stakeholders to remove trash to preserve the beauty of the Bay for future generations of people and wildlife.
Thank you. Next slide. All right. Caltrans, alongside the San Francisco Bay Water Board team, conducted a series of focused corridor-based feasibility assessment workshops for two priority Bay Area freeways with one assessment pending. Through desktop reviews and field visits, Caltrans and Water Board were able to come to terms with areas that either require additional trash control efforts or may be eligible for an infeasibility determination. As a result of the corridor assessments, additional trash capture devices are being evaluated for constructability along the East Shore Freeway at the Gilman Avenue Interchange Project and through a regional partnership project at Powell Street in collaboration with City of Emeryville. Caltrans will continue to conduct feasibility assessments for corridors in close proximity to the bay that require heightened trash control implementation. Although the previously mentioned hydrodynamic separators and the multi-gross solids removal devices are still being evaluated for use on the state highway system, Caltrans is proactively including these tools as part of the 2025 feasibility study to help identify viable locations and expedite implementation once the study concludes. Next slide, please. Caltrans is committed to ensuring due diligence in substantiating full trap capture equivalency from institutional controls submitted as part of the 2024 and future compliance benchmarks. As part of establishing the efficacy of vegetation in controlling the discharge of trash, Caltrans completed a three-year study between 2020 and 2023 at 14 drainage inlet locations situated in vegetated areas. Full trash capture equivalency was established by routinely measuring how much trash volume physically entered the drain inlets as captured by full trash capture inlet inserts. The results showed that all 14 inlets received far less than the 5 gallon per acre per year threshold. And Caltrans is committed to removing the trash from these vegetated areas at a frequency sufficient to prevent its degradation and before mowing to prevent the obliteration of trash caught by vegetation. Although Caltrans cannot relocate people into shelters or provide social services on its own, Caltrans participates in compassionate approach to the humanitarian crisis of people experiencing homelessness by working with local partners in their efforts to assist people living on state property. Caltrans contributes to a holistic approach to encampment removals through a coordinated relocation effort across the state and local agencies to ensure people do not return to the same location, move to an adjacent city or county property, or disperse into the community without resolving the core issues. Next slide, please. Trash left behind on Bay Area freeways has created a complex challenge for Caltrans in implementing a scientifically sound, fiscally responsible, and a balanced set of response actions that foster stakeholder concurrence without compromising Caltrans's number one priority, safety of our Caltrans workforce and the traveling public. Since July 2021, Caltrans has made substantial progress in collecting trash and preventing trash deposition at the source, as demonstrated by the following metrics for the Bay Area. $147 million to collect over 414,000 cubic yards of trash, 33 dump site events in coordination with local partners, offsetting expensive landfill fees to support underserved communities and mitigate the potential for illegal dumping, 1,128 encampments removed with the Interagency Council of Homelessness, issuing more than $42 million in encampment resolution grants to local agencies to provide social services benefits for over 800 Bay Area people. 296 Adopt-a-Highway adoptions with more than $1.2 million in incentive stipends paid out to adoptees from qualifying volunteer cleanups, and over 48,900 freeway lane miles swept. Next slide, please. As previously mentioned, a study is underway to determine the actual volume of trash measured in gallons per acre per year that enters the storm drain inlets after Caltrans maintenance forces collect trash and sweep freeways. The objective of the study is to determine if the maintenance standard meets full trash capture equivalency. In other words, are these maintenance efforts as equally effective as a full trash capture device? The trash discharge rates from year one field monitoring are being analyzed in collaboration with the state and San Francisco Bay Water Board, academia, and other Bay Area stormwater professionals. Statistical analysis will be applied to determine if a significant correlation exists and if any adaptive management changes are warranted for years two and three to support defensible conclusions. Changes may include adding sites to capture additional corridor characteristics, replacing some of the sites that facilitate easier access, and or adding time to the overall study. Next slide, please. This final slide demonstrates the fortitude that Caltrans, alongside our municipal partners have in controlling trash while simultaneously confronting social and environmental challenges. The pictures on the left show an encampment that was removed in November in Solano County near White Slough. Through care, compassion, and collaboration, Caltrans, City of Vallejo, multiple social service outreach teams, and various law enforcement agencies came together to offer people experiencing homelessness transition housing so the trash from the site can be controlled at the source. Caltrans urges local governments to adopt policies and plans consistent with the Caltrans encampment policy. Prioritizing encampments that pose a threat to the life, health, and safety of the community, Caltrans provides advance notice of clearance and works with local service providers to support those experiencing homelessness at the encampment and stores personal property collected at the site for at least 60 days. The middle pictures show the Gleason Beach Realignment Project, a climate adaptation project to address sea level rise. Caltrans is committed to integrating trash capture implementation as these types of projects are developed. The pictures on the right are full trash capture devices that also contribute to removal of sediment-based pollutants, such as PCB and mercury, further optimizing environmental outcomes. Caltrans appreciates the opportunity to provide transparency in the phased rollout of our compliance strategy and looks forward to continuing a successful partnership as we deliver a diverse compliance actions, set of compliance actions to protect water quality for over 7 million Bay Area residents. This concludes our update, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Tucker. There may be some questions for you or your team from board members.
I just had a quick question. I heard a few numbers that came out, $160 million on regional partnerships, $170 million on litter collection. Is there a, do you have a total number of Caltrans spend on trash-related improvements over the last few years?
Yes, we... yeah, we do report information to the governor's office. So for the CDO compliance, our projections in terms of investments made towards compliance with the CDO through 2026 for on-system retrofits on Caltrans right-of-way is roughly about $380
million. $880 million.
Yes, and for the off-system partnerships is in the order of $160 million.
Okay, so that's 880 plus 160. Okay.
Yes, 380.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, 380.
380
yes.
plus 160.
Yes, and then the maintenance efforts are in the order of about $415 million through 2026. That's attributed towards litter control efforts. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Anything further to my right?
I just have one very specific question about the Carey Street project in Oakland, and I'm just wondering if the citizens who've been putting up with the loss of access to their homes, whether that project has reached the point where people can now drive back to their driveways.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the site. I know there's a celebration tomorrow, but I don't think it's a groundbreaking or, I guess, a completion.
We have Terry from the City of Oakland, and she'll address it. She can come on down, Terry. Yeah. She's from the City of Oakland, their stormwater program, and they partnered with Caltrans to get that project done.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Good morning. The project is complete. The street is paved, and so that we're wrapping up the, you know, post-construction phase of the project.
Thank you for being here. Any further questions?
I guess I have one question. You mentioned that Caltrans is committed to maintaining the frequency of these enhanced maintenance measures. Is that institutionalized in your budget at this point? You know, the one difference with these enhanced maintenance measures is they're easily curtailed when budget issues arise, and obviously we're facing budget issues. You know, I don't envy your job here, it's an incredibly challenging one. But if you could say a few words about what Caltrans has done to institutionalize these enhanced maintenance measures for going forward.
Yeah, I can speak to that, and then I'll see if Leah, our deputy, who's online for the Bay Area, the deputy for maintenance, if she wants to add anything. Right now, our study is not controlling any of the ongoing maintenance activities right now. We are looking at if the existing activities do qualify for full trash capture equivalency. That is the focus of the study. The outcome of the study will be to develop a maintenance standard that's going to set a frequency and the timing of the maintenance activities so we can start redirecting maintenance resources towards actively pursuing efforts towards complying with the full trash capture equivalency. So right now, there has been enhanced maintenance, but the outcome of those maintenance activities, whether it meets full trash capture equivalency or not, is still to be determined. That's what the study is focused on at this point.
If I understand Caltrans' position, your view is that, in fact, those enhanced maintenance measures are meeting the milestones. Did I get that wrong?
We have conducted visual assessments at specific locations. These are mostly areas that were rated as moderate. Ratings, trash ratings, and those areas did achieve full trash capture equivalency. So there has been some level of enhanced maintenance in specific areas, certainly, but I think as we move forward, the study is going to inform more actively in terms of where the resources need to be redirected to. At this point, yes, we are claiming that the enhanced maintenance at certain locations is meeting full trash capture equivalency, yes.
And I take it you're going to continue that between now and the conclusion of the study?
Yes. Yes.
And Board Kissinger, I'd like to recommend that we let Leah, who's the head of maintenance for District 4, address the question, because you're out of Sacramento headquarters, but she actually runs the large maintenance right down, headquartered down the street, and she's online.
Fair enough.
Leah, can you please add some information to that? All right. Thank you.
Oh, hello. Thank you. I'm Leah Boudou. I think I was introduced already. I'm the maintenance deputy for District 4 Caltrans, and I love your question because really the reason why I came today, we're well aware that everyone's aware that Clean California and the boost to our resources has sunset. And the beauty of the program and the way we used it was to see where the bang for our buck was, right? So we had additional funds, additional boots on the ground, additional resources and support. And we've done some analysis on where we can use the resources that we have once that rolls up to make a bigger impact. And we've learned some things about the way we do our business. Now we are in the process of really institutionalizing it at our level at the district, but headquarters is also supporting us in that they recognized how heavy the workload is for us, and we do have some additional resources provided to us. That was a priority provided to us in terms of workforce. For me, it's interesting that the whole discussion about enhanced maintenance and why for me as the maintenance deputy, it has to be something that's seen as successful for you all and that I'm really engaged in this conversation is that it is a part of our mandate as maintaining the state highway system. And I would like that the things that we traditionally do also lend towards this abatement of litter, if you will. I have staff that is assigned to vegetation control, which includes litter abatement. And if I empower them to improve or I get them more efficiencies to do what they do, it continues on and amplifies on our mandate. One of the other things I would say in terms of what Clean California did for us and how we're leveraging it, even in the shortfall of our budget right now, is that the relationships that we've built, we've already built some established relationships in terms of expectations. I think Hardeep mentioned for our dump days and in impacted communities. That process, that relationship, that expectation has been established, and it's something within my budgetary controls. In addition, there's the delegated maintenance, which is also recently has been in the news in terms of our relationships with communities dealing with people experiencing homelessness. Now, we're currently refining the way we look at that, but that's a new tool to us to ask for help in the delegation of managing encampments and clearing them out, and knowing that they're typically a large generator of litter. Another thing I would say is adopt a highway. So adopt a highway, while Clean California initiated a stipend that incentivized more people, it really did add large, the percentage of adopters really did increase. And not all of them have left us, even though the stipends have concluded. So we've benefited from that. And then again, just an example of what we learned is that communicating this challenge and leaning into our partnerships, we've been able to make more strides with the small resources that we do have. Now, back to the resources that we do have, even before Clean California, we had really shifted the amount of resources that we are lending towards the litter removal effort. And that was in advance of things. This is something that folks are accustomed to seeing in our budget, and we're learning how to work with that. So hopefully I answered your question. I'm here for any more.
I think that's as good an answer as you can give. It's an uncertain world we live in. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Sure. Anything further for our Caltrans team, Jane?
Yeah. Alexa, I'm realizing as I look down the board that I think Bill and I were the only two that were here in 2019. And I want to say it was November or December that we issued
February.
The CDO of 2019. It was a pouring outside day, I remember, afterwards. I got drenched going through the city. I just want to say, I think as I look back on this, I don't know particularly, for all the communities, but particularly for Caltrans, how complex an issue that this really is, and how much patience and commitment and innovation and humanity was going to be required to try to get to the other side. So I can hear that this is still a ton of work and a lot of being spent and questions about which number really got hit or didn't get hit. I appreciate those. I think they're important, but I also appreciate the staff's assessment that we are very much headed in the right direction, and it feels to me like a real shift from what we've seen in earlier reports. I love the video. Thank you. I hope I can find it online. And I hate to be a broken record, but EPR, we've got to shift the burden on this to producers and stop having so much waste in our system. So I hope for Caltrans and everyone else that take a look at the EPR regulations. I think they're going to help. They can't make it worse, I hope. I don't know, Bill, but I don't know if you have any reflections as well, but I feel like maybe that's why I have another term so that I can help keep the history on this.
Well I want to endorse everything you just said. I by my questions, I don't mean to be critical of Caltrans. This is an incredibly difficult issue. I was very impressed with the video, just seeing the before and after of the homeless sites. You know, this has always been an issue that's, you know, very challenging, imposing on agencies, and obviously not just Caltrans, but the local authorities too, responsibilities that you know, are really societal and aren't going away anytime soon. So, you know, I think where my questions come from, in some measure, really just come from how long a process this has been. Obviously, the cease and desist order came in 2019 after a lot of board activity. I'm mindful of the pressure we've put on the local communities and whether there's a kind of a level playing field in terms of how the different agencies are being dealt with. But the problem is massive. I appreciate the work that's been done. There's obviously a lot more work to do. And I guess going forward, I think what will be important is that the work that's been done with the excess funds that have been available for the enhanced maintenance measures that have been undertaken, how that gets institutionalized, if in fact that's part of the solution to the problem, or at least the ongoing way to combat the problem. So I would say that, but I want to endorse what Board Member Batty said. You guys have come to it in a serious and a committed way, and I appreciate that very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to invite another important partner in this endeavor, Josh Quigley, on behalf of Save the Bay, for his comments.
Well, good morning, Chair Batty and members of the board. Again, I'm Josh Quigley with Save the Bay, and I'm once again here and appreciate the opportunity to comment on Caltrans's obligations to prevent trash pollution. Since this board issued the cease and desist order in to Caltrans in 2019, we've actually come and commented at every opportunity on the status of the agency's progress with that order at each of the previous compliance benchmarks. And we've stressed the need to ensure that the approaches undertaken don't just show visual improvement, but meet the standard that the state board has established of full trash capture or equivalence in order to reliably prevent ongoing discharges of stormwater trash into the bay. And we've noted that at previous benchmarks, Caltrans has not been able to demonstrate that standard, that standard has been met for the acreage totals that the board has mandated to be treated at each benchmark. Today's staff report notes that based on your own inspections, additional acres are needed to comply with the CDO benchmark to control trash from 6,000 acres, which was required by June of this past year. Put more bluntly, and to speak to Board Member Kissinger's question, we are once again at a position of having to recognize that Caltrans's efforts have not shown compliance with the current benchmark to the regulatory standard for reasons that I'll outline. But I don't want to give the impression that while recognizing that lack of compliance means we don't recognize progress or an improving trajectory. Ken, Hardeep, and the Caltrans team have made significant progress in increasing the amount of acreage covered by structural trash control systems installed both on and off the right-of-way and in partnership with local cities. It's also encouraging to see that additional partnership projects are in development with a number of cities to both address Caltrans and MERP compliance with the stormwater trash elimination requirements. These types of systems remain the most reliable method of controlling trash from Caltrans's property, and we continue to urge the agency to maximize the amount of acreage treated with these methods. We agree with and appreciate the staff report's insistence that Caltrans must expand the use of hydrodynamic separators and multi-gross solid removal devices or other methods that could improve efficiency by treating larger areas with fewer installation and maintenance costs. And while study of these devices will not be complete before the next benchmark in 2026, these approaches are important for ongoing compliance for reasons that I'll outline. Caltrans has also made sizable investments in removing trash from the roadway using maintenance crews, as has been discussed. And that has improved the visual conditions in many areas. However, this report claims full trash capture treatment of more than 3,000 acres, half of the total required for this past year, using these maintenance approaches. And this is the area where we continue to have the most concern because, again, the lack of data to reliably demonstrate that these maintenance efforts have proven effective to achieve full trash capture equivalency. We appreciate that Caltrans is using a modified on-land visual inspection protocol to verify the trash conditions along the roadway, which is something that we have asked for in the past. However, we have questions about the lack of frequency of inspections and the level of effort needed to verify that these areas are compliant for credit. First, on the frequency of inspections, the 3,000 acres or the more than 3,000 acres claimed for compliance in this year's report were assessed with a single visual inspection instance within the past year and a half. As the staff report indicates, when the Water Board conducted its own inspections, many of these areas continue to show trash impacts, which indicates that the trash conditions are not consistently evaluated or controlled, and that any claimed compliance is unreliable because we don't have enough data to support it, to meet the regulatory standard. As a comparison, the MRP requires that visual inspections should occur at, quote, a frequency consistent with known or estimated trash generation rates, unquote. Annual reports from the cities show regular visual inspections throughout the year within a trash management area to demonstrate the trash condition improvements are consistent and reliable before credit can be claimed. Now, that data that the visual inspections would provide is vital to the second issue, which is to determine the level of effort and frequency of maintenance necessary to actually achieve full trash capture equivalency in an ongoing way. And that is a question that the staff inspections also demonstrate. And this effort has to be sufficient and consistent because trash control will be needed in perpetuity, and if additional effort is needed, Caltrans will have to be able to budget for that. We share the staff report's concerns that Caltrans must demonstrate that not only can it establish a reliable process, but that it has the resources to continue maintenance efforts going forward. It is certainly our hope that these issues will be addressed by the trash discharge study that is currently underway, but without those answers, at this time, you can't accept that the requirements have been met. We also note that the staff has counseled Caltrans that should the ongoing trash discharge study indicate that enhanced maintenance is not sufficient to meet full trash capture equivalency, which is very possible given the challenges outlined, it must pursue alternative compliance methods, including additional trash capture device installations, perhaps using new technologies, in those areas. And that's something that, while also challenging, does provide more of a currently reliable approach, given the questions around the efforts, reliability of maintenance efforts. So we agree and think that Caltrans should be making efforts to identify contingency plans now so that potential project development is not left to a later point in the foreseeable future where more acreage may ultimately be necessary to be treated by structural trash systems rather than maintenance or institutional controls. Similar questions remain regarding the use of vegetation. Caltrans has noted that it reduced the claimed acreage under vegetation controls in this year's report to focus efforts on increasing regulatory confidence in this area. We appreciate that, and we agree with the staff report that an effective and demonstrably reliable protocol for designing vegetation controls to both intercept trash and an appropriate maintenance schedule to collect and remove it is necessary. The staff report outlines many of the critical elements that we have not seen in previous Caltrans reports on vegetation controls and look forward to reviewing a more robust protocol in the future. But the same is true for the maintenance protocol, and so a similar reporting approach would have been appropriate. Given the challenges with these non-structural control methods, which currently, again, account for more than half of the acreage and their claimed compliance for 2024, Caltrans's effort, while improving, is still a work in progress and does fall short of the 2024 benchmark. The issues of how to reliably quantify treatment using non-structural controls remain the biggest question that this board is going to have to grapple with because we're rapidly approaching additional benchmarks and the final compliance deadline of 2030. And there are many details remaining to be worked out. At some point, Caltrans will need to be given clear guidance on what will ultimately be acceptable by this board or what will not, in order to satisfy their legal obligations to prevent trash pollution under the Clean Water Act. Now, today's staff report outlines many of those details that need to be addressed, and we appreciate the ongoing engagement from Caltrans and the board staff, including Eileen, Keith, Rebecca, and Chi. We know this is not a small task, but the impact on beneficial uses to the Bay are significant. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe we have additional commenters, but before we turn to them, there may be questions from the board.
Thanks. I just have a question about when there's a cease and desist order issued. and there's compliance targets, how does it get resolved, and what's our timeline for that?
Well, ultimate timeline, these are benchmarks in between. So it's not like we wanted to wait till 2030 and say, oh, Caltrans, you haven't done anything. So the intent, I wasn't here when the cease and desist order, but how I read it and interpreted it, and Keith, feel free to chime in, is that we wanted to make sure that we're making progress instead of saying, oh, 2030, you haven't done anything. And so as Josh noted, you know, they met the 2020. We agreed that they didn't meet the 2022. And with regard to the 2024, you know, the June 30, 2024, the big outstanding issue is their enhanced maintenance measures and do they get the 3,000 plus credit? And that's what this discharge study that won't be completed for a couple more years will help us. So right now, we want to, and we're really pleased, it's, as you've noted, it's a very complex problem that Caltrans, we feel like, is on the right track. Josh notes some very good points that there's things that still need to be worked out. So my goal is, over the next year, we're going to continue to partner with Caltrans, Save the Bay, and continue to get more answers to these questions. But we feel that Caltrans has made great progress over the last couple of years and hope that, you know, with the discharge study, we'll be able to make a determination, Josh, as you pointed out, with regard to how much those enhanced maintenance measures are equivalent to full trash capture.
And the ultimate deadline is 2030, if
correct.
I understand right?
Yes.
Okay.
Any further questions?
And you can put this off if you want, but I'm impressed with how much work Caltrans has done. I'm impressed with the level of detail in which Save the Bay is engaged in. I think we're making progress, even if we don't meet exactly the deadlines. My question is whether there's less trash in the bay. I mean, you know, like, is the – Josh, you just finished talking about the impact of trash on beneficial uses. And do we actually have a way of judging that? And I'm not trying to be glib, because the one of the issues I'm sure we're going to face is that the cost per gallon removed for the last 10% is going to be way higher than the cost per gallon removed for the earlier amounts. And I'm wondering if the last 10% is enough to give us a sense visually that we are still impacting beneficial uses in the bay. And so I know this is why I said you don't have to answer this now, but at some point we're going to have to put Caltrans's work under the CDO in context with the city's work under the MRP and put this together in a way that makes some sense to us about whether, you know, it's all worth it. There are a lot of different ways to do that. I think if I remember right, in the State of the Estuary report in 2011, the first one that we did, we kind of turned sideways on this question. And eventually we're not going to be able to do that anymore.
Right. You've raised a great complex question. I was hoping to have for you today, but I haven't gotten yet the Regional Monitoring Program update book. But partially I look kind of to the Regional Monitoring Program that monitors San Francisco Bay. You know, what do they report out on? But I don't have an answer to your question. All I can say is, having spent my entire life in the Bay Area, it seems like the trash problem has gotten way worse, you know, along with the homeless. And so I do want to give credit to the cities, you know, Oakland, and I think Terry's going to be making some comments, and I want to give credit to Leah and her team at Caltrans. They've done a lot. So you raised a question, what does it cost? It's a huge problem, and I think it's gotten much more complex in the last decade with the homeless issue and the illegal dumping.
Well, there's no doubt that there's all sorts of congruency here, and if the RMP has a standard indicator of trash in the bay, that helps me a lot. I guess I'm just anticipating a time where we have done such an enormous amount of work, and whether it happens on schedule or not doesn't concern me that much, because everyone seems to be trying hard. But we're not going to be able to assess at the end whether we're actually having the effect that we want to have. I know we have removed, we're going to have some sort of weight or volume, right? It's gallons. So we're going to have gallons removed per dollar. But I'm just concerned that a few amount of gallons is still going to have a disproportionate impact on our indicators of beneficial use impact.
Dr. Grunther, if I can add to Eileen's comments, just as a general conclusion, there is absolutely less trash in the bay than there would be absent the municipal efforts and the substantial efforts of Caltrans and the partners. Yeah. So that part's good. As you recall, I'm sure, from our conversations around the MRPR issuance in 2022, the Municipal Regional Stormwater Permit, we are focused right now on discharges of trash through the storm drain. And we recognize that direct discharges associated with illegal dumping and to a certain extent unsheltered homelessness that go right into creeks in the bay are also a significant source. Now, as Hardeep and earlier Ken from Caltrans and our municipal partners have told you, there are efforts underway to work with social service agencies on unsheltered homelessness and otherwise, and I'm sure Terry could give chapter and verse on Oakland's efforts on illegal dumping, which are substantial. That is what we are likely to do. So as you know, the municipalities under the MRP are expected to reach 100% or full control of trash by June 30th, 2025. That's the date in the permit. Now, there's a prohibition on trash discharges, but as Hardeep pointed out, it's not exactly zero, right? There's some minimal level. So it does make sense for us to think about, as we get to 100%, what's the level of effort involved in going even a little bit further. What we're likely to do when we, and I'll just say one more thing and finish up. What we're likely to do as we get to the next year issuance is to sort of preview additional water board work on direct discharges. So shifting from controlling trash through the storm drain, which we're trying to finish up, to addressing this other significant source. And the work the permittees are doing now under MRP provision C-17 for unsheltered homelessness, as well as through their direct discharge control plans under MRP provision C-10, is intended to set the stage for that separate work. Hopefully that's helpful.
I didn't think I was suggesting something you guys hadn't thought about. I just can see this coming down the road, and to me, as I said before, it's a bigger question than the question of whether we're going to meet the deadline in 2026 or 2029 or 2030. I can see a lot of different. I have personally seen the increase in illegal dumping myself, just by the places I tend to recreate in the region, so I know that it's a very complex problem, and it's in some ways beyond the scope of our work. But we're still in the end in the business of assessing impacts on beneficial uses.
And just
that's the thing I'm trying to figure out.
To finish that thought, I would be remiss if I didn't remind us of Save the Bay's comments around monitoring as part of the MRP reissuance. And we also had a discussion around how challenging it is to monitor trash in and around the bay. And, of course, we can often find trash that sort of has fetched up in the tidal zone and vegetation and that kind of thing. While that's important, we know still that we have so many upland sources. We would suggest that the focus really appropriately is on controlling those sources rather than trying to divine a signal with the relatively noisy environmental data that are in and around the bay.
Yeah, but the noise and the data is just my point, which is that we can measure everything we've done, but is it enough? And trash is only one, as you know, of many issues where the environmental indicator itself is noisy enough that it gets very hard to see the signal in the noise, and I just am trying to anticipate that as we move through this process.
All right, I'd like to turn to the additional commenters, and
Julie, if you would call first for anyone in the room, and then we'll turn to those online.
So first in the room is Terry Fashion from Oakland.
Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Good morning again. Good morning, Board Chair Strauss and members of the board. Thank you for this opportunity to just provide some very quick comments. I wanted to, you know, I think I've said this here before, but I just wanted to thank Caltrans for the funding that was paramount to the successful delivery of two large trash capture devices that treat over 1,200 acres in Oakland. Caltrans made multiple funding augmentations without hesitation to ensure a successful outcome. These were very challenging projects, and we are celebrating one of them tomorrow evening, the completion of that one on Mandela Parkway. Interagency collaboration support through project development occurred throughout project development and construction phases. Multi-pollutant treatment and trash control benefits advanced restoration of San Francisco Bay and its beneficial uses. Discussions are underway regarding Caltrans funding to deliver two additional large trash capture devices in Oakland. City of Oakland executive management are supportive of continuing this successful partnership with Caltrans, and we will be seeking support as well from Oakland City Council for those two projects. And we're planning to meet actually with the Alameda County Flood Control District, because one of the projects is going to need to be one of the large devices will need to be installed within their jurisdiction. So this will be interagency, you know, collaboration. Beyond structural controls, Caltrans in Oakland also collaborate on trash collection, street sweeping, and encampment management in areas of jurisdictional intersection. Through our ongoing partnership with Caltrans, we look forward to fostering innovation and streamlining environmental protection by removing barriers and advancing regional trash control solutions. You all have talked a lot about how difficult a problem this is. It is so difficult, right? And we really need to, you know, the ultimate solution you mentioned, we need people to stop littering and stop dumping. And there are so many deep reasons for those outcomes that we're experiencing. And so, yeah, I'm just committed to working on it, both in my personal life and in my work life. Thank you.
If I could just add to Terry's remarks, I'll note that although in some circumstances the Water Board is prohibited from specifying means or manner of compliance, there are two restaurants, Brick's Brewing and June's Pizza, that were right next to the West Oakland large full trash capture device, and I think that those are an excellent approach for compliance if one would ever want to visit them upon Mandela Parkway.
Julie, our next speaker.
Yes, Alyssa Wilfong from the City of Hayward.
Please go ahead.
Does everybody hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Good morning, members of the board, colleagues, and the audience. Thank you for this opportunity to speak regarding the Caltrans item.
We've lost you for a moment, and we'll need to reset the clock. Ms. Wilfong, if you can hear me, can you restart?
Of course. Do you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Apologize for that. Quickly, My name is Elisa Wilfong. I'm the administrator for the City of Hayward's Water Pollution Source Control Program. I'm responsible for the city's trash reduction compliance requirement. My comment to you today is to inform and explain that Hayward's MRP Provision C10 compliance program would not be possible if it weren't for the collaboration and partnership with Caltrans. Under our common interest in trash reduction compliance, Caltrans and Hayward has completed two large full-scale trash capture projects, including three large device installations. These projects were extremely time-consuming, involved multi-jurisdictional cooperation and approvals, as the storm pipes involved in the installations were county-owned and maintained. And both projects included complex engineering designs to meet flooding requirements. Through it all, budget changes, time schedule delays, and approval processes, Caltrans staff, particularly Ken Johansson, worked with me to complete these projects. With conditions and constraints out of everyone's control, these projects at times looked like they weren't going to happen, but our perseverance and work and hard work paid off. At times, it took last minute jumping on calls and changing schedules. It was difficult, but our teamwork made it happen. Within Hayward, we now treat over 800 acres combined from these two projects. For Hayward, it's a huge success, and we are well on our way to meet our MRP trash reduction compliance deadline. I can't thank Caltrans enough. It's been an incredible effort, and I just want to make sure the board knows that these projects are extremely difficult and hard to do, and if it weren't for their perseverance and faith in myself and also the city, we wouldn't be able to make it happen. So I'm just very pleased to report that to everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you for participating on this important matter. Our next speaker,
Jason Day from the City of San Jose.
Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Hi, I'm Jason Day from the City of San Jose, and I wanted to come and share support with and thank Caltrans, Hardeep, Brian, Wilfong, and Ken as well. San Jose has installed roughly 37 large trash capture devices now, achieving roughly 57% trash load reduction for us alone in just those devices, not including other measures that the city entails. I'm a senior engineer with the public works team that helps design and construct these new devices, and we're very excited and appreciative of Caltrans and these co-op agreements to continue building these. We're currently on our phase 7 construction project, building 8 devices at 6 locations in San Jose. And then we already have the next 4 locations lined up and ready to go and begun design on that. So far, we've achieved 14,605 acres of San Jose right away and Caltrans right away flowing through these trash capture devices, with the current project capturing roughly 240 acres from Caltrans right away and a further 1,000 acres of San Jose right away. With the new project coming up as well, we have another further 100 acres of Caltrans right away that we'll be treating, and another 600 or so San Jose acres going through these trash capture devices. And yeah, with their support financially, as well as sharing lessons learned and knowledge from all these other partnership projects, has been immense for the City of San Jose, and we appreciate it and looking forward to doing more.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And next we have Rob Carson from Marin Countywide Stormwater Pollution Prevention Program.
Please go ahead.
The 562, can you write? He's muted but available online, so.
Ah.
Yeah.
Mr. Carson, if you can hear us, we think you may be muted and we'd love to hear from you.
Might not be him, so I think we're ready to move on. We just have a number.
Okay. Perhaps I could ask our team to follow up with Mr. Carson and just say we had wanted to hear from him. Are there any further speakers?
No one registered.
Very well. I wanted to check to see if there are any final comments on this matter for the time being from our board. We had purposefully intended that this informational item, which doesn't do it justice to call it just an informational item, but we are all committed to continuing to build the board's understanding of this complex matter and wanted to take more time today to delve into this. As you can appreciate, there's so many different facets to this, and it's not enough to just revisit this once a year. So we will continue to come back. I'm very grateful to the partners engaged in this endeavor for the innovation that we have seen since the time the cease and desist order was issued, to our team here for continuing to work through this and how it relates to the overall control of stormwater pollution in the Bay Area. I think that the next time we check in with one another on this, the challenge of the non-structural controls will be front and center, and how we are going to continue to move forward in understanding that, and also how can we support our colleagues at Caltrans, our colleagues at Save the Bay, and in the cities for pursuing different tactics and strategies to make this happen. So thank you to our team here for your hard work in presenting this, and thank you to everyone who came to engage with us on this. And I'm really grateful to the board for continuing to invest and deepen our knowledge in this matter. So that wraps up just this version for this year on this matter. And I'm ready to adjourn the meeting. But before I do, I wanted to thank our team sitting in the audience that makes these hybrid meetings go well. Thank you, gentlemen. And to thank our AGP team for their continuing support, our attorneys who keep us on the straight and narrow, and our overall strength of the regional board continues to build day in and day out. I'm grateful to the management team and the staff for the quality of work they deliver and for the subset of that that you bring to us as a board. We're very fortunate to be such an engaged and committed board. So I thank my board members and look forward to seeing you all in the new year. We will not have a January meeting, but we will have a very busy February meeting. This will conclude our public session of today's meeting. We're not meeting in closed session. Thank you all for joining us. And we will be back here on February 12th. I'd like to wish everyone a lovely holiday.